once known as the poor man of Asia over the past 4 years, while we haven't been paying attention, the Philippines has become Southeast Asia's fastest growing economy. Under the stewardship of President Aquino III, the Philippines' sovereign credit rating has been upgraded from junk to investment grade. All sorts of improvements have been made, from increasing foreign investment and tourism to unprecedented numbers of infrastructure projects through those public-private partnership. And the current president has even made some efforts to crack down on corruption. But there are some things which will never change, and that's the power and control of a small number of political family dynasties. In fact, the two richest Filipinos account for $18 billion, that's 6% of the country's wealth, while a quarter of the population, 25 million, live on a dollar a day. In despair at the inequality of his country, Miguel Sahuku has written a compelling essay in this edition of the Griffith Review called Beating Dickheads. Yes, the world is full of them, but Miguel believes the Philippines has rather more than its fair share. He is, incidentally, the winner of the 2010 Man Asia Literary Prize for his novel Ilustrado, and we welcome him to our little wireless program. Miguel, I understand that you've had to leave a romantic dinner to do this, and I am forever in your debt.
Thanks. Well, I'm just glad to be on the show, Philip, and talk about these dickheads.
Okay, well, look, let's look at one in particular. Next year, Filipinos go to the polls to elect a new president, and I am shocked to learn from you that among the hopefuls is Imelda's son, Bongbong.
That's right, how Ferdinand could this be? Marcos Jr.
How could this be when his parents fled in disgrace following the People Power Revolution of 86?
You know, I ask myself that all the time. How can this be? Yeah, it was just a few years after they fled in disgrace, Imelda came back and was charged with all of these corruption charges, which she, you know, just shrugged off somehow and shook off. And now her son is a governor, her daughter's a congresswoman. Imelda herself was both governor and congresswoman in the decades after that. It's absolutely ridiculous. But
can you hear the sharp intake of breath from around Australia? Because as I said, we haven't really been paying attention lately. We had no idea about this.
Well, we Filipinos have a very short memory, and you know, we're no longer in the spotlight. We're no longer as newsworthy as we once were after the People Power Revolution.
But wasn't there a small matter of $10 billion missing dollars? I understand the Philippines managed to get their hands on half of it stolen by the Marcos, but what about the other $5 billion smackers?
That's, nobody knows. It could be with the Marcoses, it could be with his cronies, it could be being piled up into an election war chest, which would fund Bongbong Marcos's campaign, which may not be in 2016, in May, which is a pivotal election, but I think it's an inevitability. I think definitely he will be running one day. How can he not?
Look, let's remind the listener that Ferdinand and Imelda not only knocked off all the loot, but according to historian Alfred McCoy, in fact, according to history, thousands of extrajudicial murders occurred under their watch. There were 35,000 plus torture victims. 70,000 people were incarcerated during that 21-year reign. A very short memory, as you say. Yeah,
that's right. And people are now recasting the dictator as a great leader who, in essence, made the trains run on time and the streets safe for everybody. And we're in the past few years, or past decades really, past two decades I should say, we've become so sick of the corruption and ineptitude of our leaders that we're now yearning for another dictator. So we're seeing two things. We're seeing Marcos being recast as there's a nostalgia for him and a yearning for that. And then we're seeing this other politician, Rodrigo Duterte, who's a mayor in the southern city of Davao in Mindanao, which used to be very dangerous, and he's become this dirty, hairy sort of figure that threatens to kill drug dealers and rice smugglers and criminals. And he's been tied, allegedly, to all of these death squads that have cleaned up the streets of Davao. and made it the safest city in the Philippines. And people are saying, well, this is the sort of leader we need.
Now, Aquino's reform credentials have suffered over a recent pork barrel scandal involving Enrile and former President Estrada. I understand that all Filipino administrations have faced corruption scandals of some sort.
That's right. I mean, it's something we deal with, and just it's almost like corruption is a way of life on every level. But now what we're seeing is President Aquino really making a concerted effort towards tackling that. But unfortunately, the people that he's targeting are all people in the opposition. It's not as if he's really cleaning house everywhere. He's only cleaning house against the people who have been against him.
But it sounds as though you've got a degree of respect for him.
Well, he seems to have been stewarding some sort of resurgence of the Philippines. Some people would argue that it was his predecessor, Arroyo, who put all of these things into place, and Aquino is just reaping it. But what I do know is that, unfortunately, he hasn't been as bad as some of them, namely Joseph Estrada and Arroyo, who herself was in power for 9 years and was just absolutely corrupt.
Now, let's just remember this, because Estrada nicked about $80 million while president. He was sentenced to life imprisonment. I remember that pretty clearly. But mm-hmm. he's then pardoned by his successor, Arroyo.
That's right. I mean,
and he's now the mayor of the country's capital.
And his sons are in government. His one of his sons is a very powerful senator. His mistress is the mayor of the adjacent city of San Juan, right beside Manila, where he is mayor. And he's got this stranglehold on the ports of Manila, where a lot of the trade comes through. And he's just he's got everyone by the balls, really. He's become one of the big players again. And it's shocking because, yes, he was put in jail for plunder.
Now, Gloria was arrested in 2011 at the international airport, charged with electoral sabotage. Yet she's back with a seat in Congress. But I think the one story that I find the most profoundly shocking is that of the congressman who was jailed for raping an 11-year-old girl. Tell us that story.
Yeah, that's Romeo Halos-Hoss. He was raped. Jailed for raping this minor. And while he was in jail, he built himself a tennis court. He supposedly drove around the maximum security prison in an SUV on the grounds there. And he ran for Congress twice and won, because basically that's the way the Philippines is. It's a feudalistic society, and in his district, his family and his family name had so much power that even though he was a convicted rapist in jail, he was able to win. And, of course, Gloria, who pardoned Estrada, pardoned him as well because, well, she needed the votes. She needed the backing.
Ellie Nell on RN Online and on your smartphone. And my guest is Miguel Cejuco, Filipino author. Now, what I remember there once was a brave, solitary voice, amusingly belonging to a cardinal sin. Has anyone taken that role in Filipino life?
Well, we have the Catholic Bishops' Conference of the Philippines, and they have seen themselves as the moral stewards of everything that is political and spiritual. They spearheaded this resistance to a landmark reproductive health bill that would have provided education and contraception and reproductive options to the poor in my terribly overpopulated, poverty-stricken country. And they've done things like that. They are now fighting against divorce, because in the Philippines, we're the only country in the world where divorce is actually illegal. And they do things like, you know, rally against Lady Gaga concerts and McDonald's commercials, and they don't like the fact that our constitution dictates that there is a separation between church and state.
Now let's look at the role of the writer, or indeed the artist, in the Philippines. If the middle class aren't too bothered about what is written or created, that doesn't mean they're ineffective, because in the past it was the death of a satirical author that caused a revolution that ousted, changed political history.
That's right. That was José Rizal in the late 1890s. He was one of the ilustrados, the enlightened Filipinos who had studied abroad and came back to the Filipinos fight for change. And he wrote these two books that parodied and really skewered the friars who held a stranglehold over the country. And they marched him out onto a field and shot him in the back with a firing squad. And so this is sort of the tradition that we do have. His shadow looms large over most writers. But there's this sense that, he's given us this sense of possibility that, the things that we do express, the things that we do write, could possibly have some sort of social change, even though, sometimes they might come at great cost.
Miguel, you write that in the wake of the Charlie Hebdo killings, a debate over freedom of speech and religious rights is escalating, and it causes you concern.
It does, and we're seeing this everywhere, particularly in the Philippines, but also in places like Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, the Middle East, even in the United States. But particularly in the Philippines, there's this sense that, our freedom of speech is something that is not really a freedom. It's a privilege that we only deserve if we exercise it with a sense of responsibility. But really, we're forgetting that freedom of speech is the basis for all of our other freedoms. It allows us to debate and demand and to fight for the rights and the freedoms that we as citizens deserve.
Let's remind the listener that since 1992, 77 journalists have been assassinated. Not a good track record.
No, we're one of the worst in the world. And it's not just that. We have laws against defamation which make it criminal to even discuss certain things that might be true about public figures. So a journalist who is pursuing a story can be sued and either jailed or just simply harassed by costly lawsuits, oftentimes in the districts of the politician who is upset. So it's an incredibly hard place for a lot of our journalists, even though we do have a free press.
Tell us about Grace Poe, because of all the presidential candidates, you think she stands out as the clean skin.
Well, she is quite clean, it seems, on the surface of it, because, she's relatively new and untested, which is some criticism that people level against her. She is the daughter of a very famous movie actor who himself had run for president and was seen to have really been a contender before Gloria Arroyo cheated massively in that election against him. This is Fernando Poe Jr. Now, Grace Poe has come back from the United States. She served in the movie censorship board and is now a top politician and some say a front runner, even though she doesn't have the track record. I think it's just really a testament to how shocking the other candidates are that somebody who's not quite qualified enough, perhaps, is clearly rising above the rest.
Look, I thank you very much for such a vivid description of an extraordinary society, and I wonder if you'd be kind enough to pop back from time to time and give us updates.
Oh, it would be my great pleasure, Philip. Thank you.
Miguel, thank you very much. Miguel's essay can be found in the latest Griffith Review. It's called New Asia Now. And coming up, the Journal of Cook's Companion.